Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, bringing you all the news from Washington, D.C. that the government does not want you to know. Got a big day today, a big discussion. We're going to talk about Condoleezza Rice's testimony before the 9/11 Commission. And if there's one thing the government did not want you to know, it was what she was going to testify to today. As you know, if you've been watching along, Bush fought every step of the way, every inch, to prevent this testimony. Well, I mean, first he opposed the 9/11 Commission to begin with. Then he supported having Kissinger be the head of the commission. He actually named Henry Kissinger, that master of open government, to head the commission. And when Kissinger didn't want to disclose some of his very secretive clients, some of whom, who knows, may have been involved in 9/11, he's known to have a number of clients in that part of the world, then finally we have the commission as it is with Keenan Hamilton. But again, the Bush administration stonewalled the commission. They didn't want them to have documents. They didn't want them to have testimony. They fought over presidential daily briefs. And, of course, they fought very hard not to allow Condoleezza Rice to testify in public before the 9/11 Commission. Well, luckily in a democracy, and we still have some of that in America, people fight back. And so what happened? The families complained, Democrats complained, even a number of Republicans complained. Soon the entire commission was demanding that Condoleezza Rice testify before the commission, live, under oath, and in public. So Bush made a deal, trying to do a face-saving deal. He said, all right, I'll allow Condoleezza Rice to testify if you don't ask anyone else to testify afterwards in public. Of course, what that does is it means that if they find information that Condoleezza Rice says it's untrue, there's no way to check it. There's no way to get someone to contradict her. She will definitely have the last word. You can't even get her deputy, a guy by the name of Stephen Hadley, who's figured in a number of different problems with intelligence and the Bush administration. So she gets the last word, and Bush and Cheney will testify. Actually, I take that back. They won't testify. They'll speak before the commission. They'll read their talking points. They won't testify. They won't go under oath. They won't go in public. And they have to go together because George Bush needs Dick Cheney by his side. The boy king, Prince George, can't handle testimony alone. After all, it's not like he's an important enough person. He's only president of the United States. But, you know, he wasn't elected to the job. He was appointed. So he's got to have his daddy's guy beside him. And Dick Cheney will of course, sit Georgie on his knee and tell him what to say. I don't know of a single president in American history who is so, what's the word I can use, who's so unwilling to trust his own words, who depends so much on his vice president. If you can name one, please do. And if you want to comment on the Condoleezza Rice testimony, we're going to go through it bit by bit by bit. Frankly, I don't know that we'll have enough time today in the hour I have allotted to me. But if you want to call in and talk about Condoleezza Rice, please do. The number is toll-free, 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667. Call in. Let your voice be heard. What did you think? How did she handle herself? What did you think of the conflicts between her and some of the commissioners? Do you think that she carried herself off well? And what do you think of the various things she said? We're going to go through them bit by bit, but as always, I want to invite you to join in the discussion. And then we've got a bunch of terrific shows ahead scheduled for you. I hope you'll listen in the future. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about what's going on in the Sudan. Some have called it genocide, and it looks disturbingly like that might be the case. We've got someone from the Persecution Project and Amnesty International both to talk with us tomorrow about what's going on in Sudan. Here on the Inside Scoop, I try to give you all information that you're not getting in the mainstream press, and this is not something that's been very well talked about. On Sunday, we're going to continue talking about the 9/11 Commission. If we don't finish today, any of your questions can continue on Sunday at 8 Eastern Time. And then Monday, I'm really looking forward to Monday. Monday, I've got author Craig Unger to talk about his book, House of Bush, House of Saud, the connections between the Bush family and the Saudi government, and his claim that the Saudi government has given more than $1 billion to Bush and Bush family members over the course of decades. So we've got a bunch of terrific shows ahead. Let's talk now about Condoleezza Rice. You know, there's so many things that I knew and so many things I learned today. And it's really interesting when you just compare her testimony with some of the facts. For example, she said about the presidential briefing on August 6th, which, by the way, is still confidential. They still won't disclose it. They won't declassify it. Condoleezza Rice said there's nothing in it about the threat of attack in the United States. to which Commissioner Benveniste pressed her to give the title of the briefing. She resisted. She didn't want to do it. It's classified. But she finally agreed to give him the title of the briefing. And what's the title of the briefing that says nothing about a threat in the United States? The title is, quote, Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States. That's right. The name of the briefing. The name of the briefing that Condoleezza Rice herself said that there was nothing about an attack in there was, am I going to repeat it again, Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States. We learned so much at this hearing. I have to say, by the way, I do think that Condoleezza Rice did acquit herself better in the testimony than she has on all of the different talk shows she's been on. I think that on the talk shows she had to read her talking points. We know from Paul O'Neill in his book, The Price of Loyalty by Ron Susskind, former Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill made it very clear that members of the Bush administration are not allowed to speak freely. They're required to say the talking points of the day, probably drafted by Dick Cheney. At least that's where he thought it came from. Even he, the cabinet officer, wasn't sure where they were coming from. But you have to give the talking points. And, this time she had to go beyond talking points. This was a briefing. This was testimony under oath. Many of you know I used to work as an attorney in Congress, and I heard a number of these briefings. I've seen John Ashcroft testify publicly. I've seen Colin Powell. I've seen Don Rumsfeld. And there's something about that venue, that place, where you stand up and the person, tells the truth under oath, that I think gets people to speak more clearly. And there was, there were some very good questions, particularly by Democrats on the panel, and I think they caught Condoleezza Rice in a lot of things. But the main thing is she couldn't quite spin the way she could on the talking shows. Sure she tried. There was some filibustering in there. One of the things that people understand who go before these congressional briefings a lot, and virtually all of our witnesses understood when I was at these congressional briefings, is that it's a battle of time. You see, you don't have unlimited time. The commissioners were given 10 minutes each on, a vital question of national security. What happened before September 11th? What was the president doing? And so it became a battle between how many questions they could get out and how long Condoleezza Rice could filibuster. And I think we saw a lot of strong statements back and forth between Commissioner Benveniste, former Senator Kerry of Nebraska, between them trying to get statements out and her filibustering. But again, I want to hear what you think. 877-57-SCOOP. I'm going to go through some of my thoughts on the issue, but I really want to hear from you. Did you see it? What did you think about it? Let's go through some of the facts. Here are some of the things that you may or may not know, but I think that Condoleezza Rice made clear at the briefing today. She made clear, first of all, that Clinton had done a lot of work on terrorism. And in fact, she expressly said that. So all the Republican talking point people, all the Sean Hannitys and Rush Limbaughs of the world who, take the White House talking points and just kind of repeat them word for word, talking about how bad Clinton was. Well, according to Condoleezza Rice, Clinton had done a lot of work. Clinton thought terrorism a very high priority. She agrees with Richard Clark on that. And in fact, she kept along Richard Clark, who worked for Clinton and Bush and Reagan before, and Louis Freeh, director of the FBI. She also mentions that there were plans and plans and plans at the Pentagon. Now, this was interesting to me because Condoleezza Rice has always denied there were any plans to take out al-Qaeda. In fact, she expressly said that, at which point Commissioner Kerry said that's not true. I'm going to be replaying a lot of these hearings on Sunday. So if you missed the high points of the hearings, I hope you'll tune in to my Sunday show, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. We're going to replay a lot of the testimony, and I'll give you more comments on it. But she really said that there were plans. She had to concede there were plans and plans at the Pentagon. But she went on to say that these plans don't get used without political support. Now, I thought that was very interesting because her point was, there are lots of plans and so it doesn't mean anything. As I took her testimony, if you don't get plans without political support, then why wasn't there the political support to implement these plans? We learned also that Clinton had a plan called Infinite Resolve that went well beyond some of the former plans we heard. Let's go now, though, to the Bush administration and what they knew from January to September of 2001. We know that the president received more than 40 briefings on al-Qaeda from January to September. More than 40 briefings Condoleezza Rice said. And she also agreed and that by August 2001, they knew Al-Qaeda was involved in the first Trade Center bombing. What I found even more interesting was when she nodded her head at the comment by Richard Benveniste, Commissioner Benveniste, that Sandy Berger had said to her, this, of course, is Clinton's national security advisor, and the only personal meeting he had with Condoleezza Rice, explicitly told her that terrorism should be the highest priority for her, and particularly Al-Qaeda. She has to watch about that, and she nodded her head. Now, this is something that I reported on my very first show way back in June 2003. I reported it when I began on the radio, and I've gotten all these claims by Republicans. Oh, Sandy Berger's lying. Well, now we know the truth. Condoleezza Rice has admitted, when forced under oath, that yes, she was specifically warned about terrorism, specifically Al-Qaeda, from the Clinton officials. We learned that Agent Kenneth Williams had said the FBI should investigate whether Al-Qaeda operatives were training at U.S. flight schools. That Kenneth Williams, this FBI agent, had said that Osama bin Laden's followers, that they might be infiltrating as pilots and suggested a national program to track suspicious flight schools. And what Condoleezza Rice said was that she told the FBI, or someone told the FBI, to do a task force to check out this thing, and she assumed they were doing the job. And no one went out to sort of check what they were doing. As Commissioner Carey said, if the FBI had found out about Colleen Rowley's memo, that intrepid FBI agent who discovered Zacharias Moussaoui, the 9/11 terrorist who never learned how to fly a plane right, if they'd known about Moussaoui, as Commissioner Carey put it, all they had to do was go out on the intel link, in other words, go out and let people in the CIA and across the world know about Moussaoui, and as Carey put it, the game's over. It ends. The conspiracy would have been rolled up. Condoleezza Rice kept talking about the institutional problems between the FBI and the CIA, how they weren't talking to each other, how that was part of the law, and that was the problem. But as Carey put it, we all know the FBI and the CIA couldn't talk at that time. Everyone in intelligence knows about the barrier between domestic and national intelligence. And why? So what? So what? You still have to follow up. You knew Al-Qaeda operatives were in the United States. Why didn't you check out the link? There's so much more. There's so much more to talk about. As I said, there's the August 6th memo to the president that specifically mentioned patterns of suspicious activity in the United States consistent with preparations for hijacking. And again, Condoleezza Rice, who said no one imagined that anyone could, you know, hijack a plane to fly into buildings, was forced to concede, yes, there were others that knew, even if she didn't know. Again, there's so much to talk about here, and I want to hear from you. After the break, please call in. The number's 877-57-SCOOP. We got a lot to talk about. I want to hear, what did you think of her testimony? Was she believable? At the end of the day, could President Bush have stopped 9/11 like Clinton did the Millennium Plot? What do you think? The number's 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be back with more of the Inside Scoop and your calls right after these messages.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. An unreported bomb threat leaves three unions representing Northwest Airlines employees steamed. One plane was searched in Detroit, another was searched in Los Angeles, and a third in both Memphis, Tennessee, and Miami. Grievances were filed by the Professional Flight Attendants Association, the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, and the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association. The unions want specific protocol for immediately informing airline employees of any threat.
Tyson Foods faces new unfair labor practice charges from two meatpacking plants. Workers at Tyson's Wallula, Washington facility vote on whether to decertify their union today. And leading up to the vote, Teamsters Local 556 claims Tyson offered people promotions and bonuses for voting no on the union and peppered the plant with stickers urging the same. Tyson's contract with the Teamsters in Washington State expires at the end of May. At the Tyson plant in Jefferson, Wisconsin, United Food and Commercial Workers Local 538 is asking the National Labor Relations Board to force forced Tyson to rehire workers that went on strike for nearly a year against a contract offer that cut their wages and benefits. As part of its settlement in January, Tyson promised to take back the strikers but reserved the right to put them in entry-level jobs. Two-thirds of them still await the call back to work. A petition to decertify the UFCW local at the Jefferson Packing House is already pending at the NLRB, filed by the replacement workers brought in during the strike. A ruling on that effort is expected before the end of the month.
More than 1,000 Rhode Island home care workers have the green light to join a labor union thanks to a ruling Tuesday by the State Labor Relations Board. Home child care providers are mostly women who care for up to 6 children in their homes or up to 8 with an assistant. These workers will now have 60 days to vote on whether or not to join the AFL-CIO Family Child Care Providers Union, gaining state benefits and a unified voice regarding working conditions.
Walmart's referendum to circumvent the city of Inglewood, California, and build a small retail village exempt from city oversight failed Tuesday. The company took its development to the ballot box after the Inglewood City Council overwhelmingly rejected it. Voter turnout was 29%. 60% said no.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Beyond plunging the federal budget into a record deficit, the Bush tax cuts shifted the tax burden significantly. According to United for a Fair Economy, corporate taxes have dropped 67%, compared to a 17% increase in individual taxes. Meanwhile, states are shouldering more of the tax burden. Collectively, they've seen a 15% increase in their share of taxes.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about the extraordinary testimony of National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice before the 9/11 Commission. We're taking your calls, 877-57-SCOOP. What did you learn? What did you know? What didn't you know? Do you believe her? What's going on here? Did they know that planes could hit the United States? Was Bush aware, in fact, of the Al-Qaeda operatives in the United States? What did they do about it? Why didn't they take it seriously? Why didn't the principals meet? Why didn't we respond after the USS Cole attack? Why didn't we shake the trees of the FBI? What is going on here? We're taking your calls and we're going over the testimony here on the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your first name? Where are you from?
Arlen, Sarasota.
Arlen from Sarasota. Yeah, did you see the testimony this morning?
I've seen all I wanted to see.
Yeah, okay. What did you think?
At best, I think Condi Rice deflected the questions the commissioners asked her well enough to maliciously reinstitute their intent for the purpose of graying the area of discussion and discovery.
You know, I'll tell you, in some ways I think she did a good job. I mean, I think she was certainly composed. She didn't get riled. But I don't think she really deflected the questions too well. I mean, I look at between her and Commissioner Benveniste, or between her and Commissioner Carey, I think they got a lot of good things on her. For example, she admitted that she knew there were Al-Qaeda operatives in the United States, and then she told Carey she couldn't remember whether or not she told the president that.
That's my point exactly. That's why if you listen to what I said she did it well enough to maliciously reinstitute their intent, to confuse the issue, to put it in a different perspective. I think she did it maliciously, and that's why I agree with you, and that supports my point of contention that it's malicious in her nature, because she confused the issue as well as she could to put it in an area that is very hard to define, and that's her whole point of her testimony, and that's what I think she intended to do from the onset by her training, by her alliance politically, and her position in the Bush regime.
Yeah, well, clearly she was practicing. They said she'd been working for days, basically going through every single day, and she kept repeating things like there's no silver bullet. But again, I don't think she escaped unscathed. I mean,
I totally agree.
Okay.
That's why I used that word malicious.
Okay. Well, good.
She did it well enough. She tried to, in my opinion, dishonestly from the onset, do it well enough to be convincing But in the process, she maliciously, or she exposed her malicious intent. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think she exposed a lot of negligence on behalf of the Bush administration. And,
Yeah. I mean, come on, sir.
Well, no, look.
You know, and what,
Arlen, I agree with you, but
48 hours, you know, after this country being on a super high alert before 9/11 went down, and then 9/11 goes down, and then all these alphabets that are the Keystone Cops that's walking on top of each other and everything, they manage to pull it together within 24 or 48 hours and have the media blaring out who all these people were. They knew where they were. They went out to go get them and pick them all up. They had to been monitoring the whole time. So
let me tell you something, Arlen.
Actually, I'm not buying it.
No, actually, let me confirm exactly what you're saying, because I was in Congress at the time. I was working as legislative counsel. And I'll tell you this. On the day of September 11th, my boss and every member of Congress was called in to I guess, confidential, although later they could talk about it, but basically called in to say what happened, who caused 9/11, and you're absolutely right. They knew from the outset, they knew from the moment of the attacks that 9/11, that Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden was behind the attacks. So what's interesting to me is that later on, Bush is saying, you know, is Iraq involved? When they're already telling members of Congress that Al-Qaeda is involved right after the attack. So I just want to confirm that you're absolutely right. They did know from the moment of the attacks it was Al-Qaeda.
A bureaucracy is too big, too large to mysteriously drop the ball from A to Z across the board just for a window of opportunity for these perpetrators to perpetrate this act. It just doesn't happen.
Well, you know, I don't know. Maybe I disagree with you there. I mean, clearly they were.
Please.
You think they intentionally allowed this to happen?
It looks like it to me.
You think the Bush administration wanted the terrorist attacks?
This is an oil man. And this will prove, once you get through the religion, once you get through the media portrayals, history, I think, will prove that the true, most paramount intention of this whole movement into the Mideast is to get that oil.
Well, I agree with you
people,
there.
And all these other means are steps along the way to convince the people that aren't convinced or to affirm the support of the people that are falling for it. And I think it's the bottom line with these people and the Bush family. You got to look at the money that put them into power. Those people, you know, they want a return on their investment in Bush and company. And look at Cheney and his no-bid contracts, and he's still getting payments from Halliburton. Look at the abuses they're doing over there, no-bid contracts. Look at the industry complex and the military contracts, all these super high-priced $400 billion we're spending now on defense, supposedly. Right. I mean, you're talking so much money, my God. Lord have mercy, you're talking so much money. Give me a break.
Yeah.
And these people, when they invest in politicians, you think that they're doing it because they just like them or go to the same church?
No. I'm not saying any of that. I want to thank you for your call, Arlen. I agree with you that absolutely that we were going into Iraq to get oil and all
what
that kind
BNAC?
Of thing.
BNAC proves my point, too. They had this plan out there to do this way before Bush was in.
Oh, no, that's
96. I mean, it's coming out of the closet now, but they've had this thing out on different tables, maybe not out in the mainstream media or out in the right-wing radio, but they've had this thing out for a long time that they had a plan to go over there. And if you really want my opinion, I'll take it on further why they want to do this. This is like their emergency response to their screwing up the economy so much with free trade and making China so strong so fast that they really think in their little crazy minds that they can get over there and get that oil, and that'll be the solution to keep their little game on both sides issue controlled into the future, and they can use it as a stick against China, but it's not going to work.
Well, you made some good points, Alan. I want to thank you very much for your call. Thanks for calling
you, sir.
In. I got to tell you, a lot of points that Arlen makes are correct. We talked about PNAC. PNAC, if you haven't heard before, is the Project for New American Century. And it's a group of Bush advisors that have been working. They believe they can actually bring democracy to Arab nations and to the Middle East, and they can do it by force. And indeed, we know from Paul O'Neill's book, we know from that book, The Price of Loyalty by Ron Suskind, that, yes, in the first 10 days of the Bush administration, In those first 10 days, we had plans to divide up the Iraqi oil fields among various oil companies. So I think that's all. I mean, the Bush administration may dispute it, but I think all of us thoughtful observers, no one can really dispute that. Well, I disagree with Arlen, and I wouldn't go to that next step, but again, I want to hear from you if you disagree with me, is I don't think you can say that Bush wanted 9/11. I think that goes a little bit too far. You can say he wanted the Iraq War. You can say it's corrupt. You can say, you know, he does these no-bid contracts with Halliburton to help out his friends, giving him money. All of that, I agree with Arlen 100%, and I'll also agree that the war with Iraq was unnecessary. I don't think Bush wanted 9/11. I'm not willing to go that far yet. I am willing to say that he was incompetent, that he wasn't focused on terrorism like Clinton was, that he was too busy talking about missile defense and all kinds of other things, and basically vacationing in Crawford when he should have studied Al-Qaeda. I don't think it was intentional, but again, feel free to disagree with me. The number's 877-57-SCOOP. I want to move on, though, before I take more calls and talk about more of what we saw today, what we heard from Condoleezza Rice. What we saw is that she knew, she conceded that she knew that there were sleeper cells of Al-Qaeda in the United States. Indeed, Dick Clark, counterterrorism czar Dick Clark, mentioned it in a memo to her on January 25th, which was 5 days after Bush came to office. And what was interesting to me is they said to Rice, you know, did you tell the president about these Al-Qaeda sleeper cells? She couldn't remember. She, for days, as Arlen pointed out, for days, she'd been practicing on what to say. She'd gone over all her notes. She can't remember whether she told the president there were sleeper cells of Al-Qaeda in the United States. Here she said Al-Qaeda was the highest priority, right? This was the most important thing they were focused on. And she doesn't remember whether she told the president, oh, by the way, we got some Al-Qaeda operatives in the United States that, you know, they're living in the U.S. And she just can't remember. You know, in 1999, President Clinton heard there were cells in Brooklyn and Boston, and he destroyed them. We know that again from the testimony today. He stopped the Millennium Plot, and I just don't think they were focused on it. Rice basically admits, in fact, they weren't focused on it, but then she kind of goes back and forth. She's kind of saying, look, we were absolutely focused on Al-Qaeda, and you can't blame us for not being focused on Al-Qaeda. That's what a lawyer would say. It's arguing in the alternative. It's kind of like that old case where a guy borrows his neighbor's car and returns it all crashed up, and the neighbor sues him to, you know, get the car fixed. And he says, well, number one, I never took the car. Number two, I returned it in perfect condition. And number three, it was beat up when I took it. Well, that's the argument that Condoleezza Rice is making. She says, number one, we were absolutely focused on Al-Qaeda. Number two, we can't be blamed for not focusing on Al-Qaeda. Number three, Clinton did a lousy job before. Number four, we can't be blamed because we did the same thing that Clinton did, and Clinton did a pretty good job. She's contradicting herself, and I think the problem is that she's got to defend a policy that's contradictory. One of the things I found interesting was when they asked her, would principals meetings have helped? Now you know what principals meetings are. Basically, they're a way for all the leaders in government, the cabinet, the attorney general, the head of the FBI, the CIA, head of the immigration services, to get together and talk about the threat and to really push people to shake the trees, if you will, to focus on the threat. Prior to December 31st, 1999, when Clinton knew of there was a threat, he had principal meetings virtually every day or every other day. When he would go and he would say to his FBI director, what is being done? Say to the Immigration Service, what is being done? And we know what happened. The Immigration Service, the customs people, were on the ball. They caught two terrorists coming in from Canada, one in Washington State, one in Vermont. We stopped the Millennium threat. Well, according to Condoleezza Rice, principals' meetings don't really matter. You know, and she may have a point. After all, Clinton was in control of his government. He was directing the principals' meetings, right? Bush, it may well be that principals' meetings, it doesn't matter whether the president is there or not, because we all know he's not really in charge. You know, Dick Cheney and Karl Rove are doing most of these things. But she said principal meetings would not have helped at all, that they were taking their time, and it wasn't a problem. What's interesting to me, though, is that if you look at even the principals, they didn't know. If you look at the cabinet members, if you look at the high-level officials in government, Norm Mineta, transportation secretary, in charge of our airlines, had no idea that there were any threats against the nation, had no idea that, as Condoleezza Rice says, there was such enormous chatter. She says, let me find her exact quote here. She said that unbelievable, this is direct chatter from our intelligence agencies. They say an attack was coming, unbelievable news coming in weeks, big event, there will be a very, 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 very big uproar, there will be attacks in the near future. Okay? But she didn't feel like warning Norm Mineta. We also knew that at least some in the CIA and the FBI had talked about using planes as weapons. She apparently didn't know about it. She told John Ashcroft about it, and we know John Ashcroft started taking commercial flights. But he did nothing in the Justice Department, nothing to alert the FBI, which, after all, is under Ashcroft's jurisdiction. Now, you should know that. The FBI works for the Justice Department. And what's interesting to me is Condoleezza Rice just assumed the FBI was doing their job. She says that she said there was a task to the FBI. Here's how she put it. She said the FBI was tasked with finding out what the domestic threat was. And so since they were doing that, and since this was domestic, she assumed everything was just fine. Well, let me read from you what Commissioner Romer said. He said that we have done thousands of interviews here at the 9/11 Commission. We have gone through literally millions of pieces of paper. To date, we have found nobody at the Federal Bureau of Investigation, at the FBI, that knows anything about a tasking of field offices. We've talked with the director at the time of the FBI during this threat period, Mr. Picard. He says he didn't tell the field officers to do this. We've got nothing. Nothing went down the chain. Now, either Condoleezza Rice is not telling the truth, or thousands of FBI people are not telling the truth. Or maybe she told someone at the FBI, hey, could you look into this? And no one ever did, and she didn't follow up. Now, again, hindsight's 20/20, but you would think with the unprecedented level of chatter, the unprecedented level of talk that there's going to be a terrorist attack in the United States, you think that she could check to see if the FBI is doing their job. Now, she may say, you know what, that's not my job. It's not my job. The CIA and the FBI are separate institutions. I just handle foreign stuff. Well, here's the answer. If it's not Condoleezza Rice's job, there's only one further place for the buck to go. It's the President of the United States. If there wasn't before 9/11 coordination between the FBI and the CIA, and I think we can agree there wasn't. In fact, later on in the hour, I'm going to talk a little bit about the Patriot Act and how some parts of it are good while other parts are bad, and the good parts actually allow coordination between the FBI and the CIA. But before September 11th, there wasn't this coordination between the CIA and the FBI. That means that there's one guy or two that actually can coordinate the two, can actually take information from one to the other. Their names? George Bush and Dick Cheney. After all, if the CIA and the FBI can't directly coordinate, then you gotta go to the people at the top. You gotta expect the president to take this thing seriously enough that he might even end the longest presidential vacation in modern history in Crawford, Texas. He might even go and insist that the FBI do their job. What's interesting to me is it's not just the president, but the vice president too. Did you know, do people even know what we heard from Condoleezza Rice today? That it was Vice President Dick Cheney's responsibility to look into terrorism? He had two task forces in early 2001. One dealt with energy and one dealt with terrorism. Which do you think Cheney spent more time dealing with? We know he spent enough time with the Energy Commission that he won't even turn over documents to find out what the Energy Commission found. Terrorism? There's not a single record that he met a single time to talk about terrorism. That was his job. Vice President Cheney, the hatchet man, the guy attacking everybody, the guy focused on Iraq, the guy that, according to Paul O'Neill, former Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill, is controlling the government, basically sitting Bush the marionette on his knee and telling him what to say, Dick Cheney couldn't take the time to have a meeting on terrorism. Indeed, there were 33 principals meetings between January and September 2001, 33, some dealt with Russia, some dealt with missile defense, not a single one dealt with counterterrorism. mean, it's amazing to me, really, how much Clark has been proven right by Condoleezza Rice's testimony. But again, I want to hear what you think. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. 877-57-SCOOP. Did you see the testimony? What did you think? You can also email me by sending an email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. And I want to know from you if you think that she did good, if you think that the 9/11 attacks could have been prevented. You know, it's interesting to me. There's so many things that are interesting to me. One is that Condoleezza Rice decided not to attack the Cole, not to attack in response to the attack on the USS Cole. As you recall, back in 2000, our warship in the waters of Yemen, the USS Cole, was attacked by al-Qaeda. They sent a small boat in October 2000, October 28th, I believe, and they blew up a ship. They killed 17 soldiers. And Clinton had prepared a response, turned it over via Richard Clark to Bush, decided not to respond, to give the new president a chance to respond. Obviously, if Gore had been president, there would have been a response. But Condoleezza Rice said, nope. Don't believe in swatting flies. She said, the president said, we don't want to swat flies. We don't want to respond in little ways. We want to respond in big ways. But the problem is there's no evidence there was any response at all to the Cole threat. And even the terrorists, in fact, that have been giving interviews in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, have said that our failure to respond to the Cole, well, that led them to think that they really could do just about anything. But I want to know from you, what do you think? 877-57-SCOOP. What do you think that we've done post 9/11? Have we done enough hardening of targets? I want to tell you about my experience working for the committee overseeing the Homeland Security Department, talking about post 9/11, and of course the war in Iraq, whether it's helping at all. And all those things we're going to talk about right after these messages. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. Call in, let me know what you think about Condoleezza Rice.
Poor Carl. He's had a bad few weeks, and well, Carl is cranky. Karl Rove, I'm talking about, George W.'s Machiavellian, Svengalian political operative who specializes in personal attack hatchet jobs on his clients' political enemies. Mudslinging is not enough for Rove. He tries to slime those he goes after. Nice is not in his vocabulary or character. But one of the people Carl has been trying to slime in recent days is Richard Clark, the counterterrorism expert who has blown the whistle on our toy soldier war president, and the slime is not sticking. In fact, it's Carl and his client-in-chief who have ended up with slime blowback all over them. So Rove was already in a foul funk when, on an otherwise serene Sunday afternoon in his swank Washington neighborhood, several hundred protesters suddenly showed up on his lawn. These were low-income folks from the Midwest who had come to their nation's capital to be heard on a bill that would provide educational opportunities for their children, a bill that Rove was keeping bottled up. They had requested a meeting, but he refused even to reply. So they came to him for a surprise Sunday session, chanting, "Carl, Carl, come on out. See what the Dream Act is all about." This threw Carl into a hissy fit. "Get off my property," shouted the public servant to the public. The crowd shouted back in unison, "Carl Rove ain't got no soul." They waved signs at him through his locked windows as he summoned the Secret Service to save him from his public. Finally, he agreed to meet with two of the protesters if all the rest left. They did, and Carl opened his garage door for a 2-minute meeting, during which he mostly screamed at them, closing it off with, "Don't ever dare to come back." This is Jim Hightower saying, "Yeah, Carl, what do those people think this is, a democracy?" If you want to meet with Carl, make a campaign contribution and hire a corporate lobbyist like everyone else he knows.
While you can't see brilliant colors on the radio, you can use them in your business. That's why the Xerox WorkCenter M24 digital color copier printer is attractive to anyone who listens to the voice of reason. The lease price is a low $189 a month. You get brilliant Xerox color for less than 9 cents a page, plus the Xerox Total Satisfaction Guarantee. To get all the colors you can't see on the radio, do the most reasonable thing.
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Additional per copy charge.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello. Relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about the testimony of National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice before the 9/11 Commission. She did not want to testify. She fought testifying. We had Bush try very hard not to let the commission get documents, not to let her testify, to be opposed to the commission from the beginning. But she did testify. And there's all kinds of information, some of which is just confirming what we already knew. Some of it is learning new things. Things about using planes as a weapon. Things about knowing that there is an attack against the United States. Things about the failure of the FBI to do anything to stop this. I even learned today that a commission chartered by Clinton and Gingrich, Bill Clinton and Newt Gingrich, clearly people of different political views, both said that in their terrorism report that they specifically gave to Condoleezza Rice, which she conceded they gave to him, quote, we're going to get hit. We're going to get hit big, big systemic problems, and the FBI is not working the way it should. Now, if the FBI were working the way it should, don't you think Colleen Rowley would have gotten her word out? Don't you think we would have found out about the 9/11 hijackers? I mean, don't you think if someone had been on the ball, had been doing their job, we would have found out about this? Condoleezza Rice says no. There was absolutely nothing that could have been done. In hindsight, no one could have even thought of any of these things. What do you think? The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667. You can also email me by sending an email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. Caller, you're on the air. What's your first name? Where are you from?
This is Ben from Elgin, Illinois.
Hi, Ben from Elgin, Illinois. What do you think?
Well, you know, I used to think that, that the whole thing happened through depraved indifference. It looked to me like they had everything that they would have needed to prevent this 100%, but that they really didn't care enough to even attempt to put the pieces together. But in recent days, especially listening to Ms. Rice's really evasive testimony this morning, I've begun to believe that although they did not know exactly when or exactly what the terrorists were expecting to do, they thought that there was going to be a domestic hijacking of some sort, and they believed that a small event like a hijacking would probably be politically useful to them.
Hmm.
So I think they let it happen on purpose, but they were much too incompetent to know what it was.
Well, that's an interesting point. I mean, that I think has more a little bit more believability than Arlen's point that they really wanted September 11th of that magnitude to occur, but maybe something small.
Well, you know, I mean, think about it. An aircraft taken by, you know, your traditional hijacking.
Right.
Think about all the hijackings from the 70s.
Right.
You know, bunch of guys, airplane flies from airport to airport. They let people off, you know, one by one. Eventually, you know, our brave SWAT team storms the airplane. Flash bombs go off. Bush looks like a hero. All the hijackers mysteriously dead. But, you know, gee, it's interesting how the paperwork found in their bodies points right to Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, no, okay. That's an interesting conspiracy theory. But I understand where you're coming from. I understand where you're coming from.
The amount of evasion that I'm seeing here is, if they were righteously unaware, they could actually tell us the truth about that, and all they'd look is stupid. They already look stupid, and they know it.
Well, I guess, look, I don't know. You know, you could be right. Bush doesn't talk to me very much. We haven't gone out drinking in a while because he always chokes on those pretzels and stuff. But It could be also that this is just the most secretive administration because they're hiding their incredible incompetence, right? I mean, I don't think we have to make the argument that they're, you know, intentionally causing 9/11 to say that they're profoundly incompetent in not preventing 9/11. I mean, I don't think that we have to prove that much of a conspiracy to say that, you know, these people shouldn't be in control of our country.
Now, I know for fact that given the lead time they had from that August 6th memo,
yep.
There is exactly one thing that they could have done that would have prevented 9/11. And that is you go to the security services of the country. You go to the Treasury Department, you go to the DEA, you go to the FBI, you go to military police, and you say, we have a crash program. All of you show up at Quantico. We're going to teach you to be fairly poor sky marshals in the next 3 weeks.
Well, that's true. And, you know, sky marshals is not a new idea.
No.
A number of countries have had them. Israel, I know, has had sky marshals, and they've stopped hijacking since the 70s. In fact, what's interesting about sky marshals, Ben, and I'm glad you raised that point, because this is something I've seen virtually nowhere, but I remember from my time in government, Al Gore, good old Vice President Al Gore, who's been maligned, I think, extremely by not just Republicans, but by mainstream pundits and stuff. Al Gore had a commission to study air security, and his commission's recommendations included sky marshals. And it's very interesting because the whole thing was shelved by the Bush administration. In fact, he tried to do it in the Clinton administration, but the Republican Congress didn't want to do it. It was too expensive. Of course, it's too expensive to protect our security. And then, of course, Bush never took it up. But what's interesting is that Al Gore, who the Republicans, you know, laugh, oh, he claims to invent the internet and all this stuff, which he did help support. They never mention the recommendations of his commission on protecting us from the air.
Well, you know, I really do believe that, you know, there are some problems that can be solved by application of appropriate force. And one man with a clip full of frangible bullets on each one of those airliners would have made all the difference.
I think that's exactly right. And I have to tell you, the Democrats as well as the Republicans supported the idea of pilots having guns on aircraft. There were a few people who were opposed to it. And I'm, by the way, I fully support gun control. I think we need to regulate guns. I think it's perfectly fine to register guns like we do cars. But the way I see it, a pilot can already kill you, right? They can already fly the plane into a building. So I don't mind giving pilots guns. But these are the kinds of things that should have been thought about, that certainly Gore had worked on. And this idea that, oh, we never could have thought about using planes as a weapon, that was just beyond us. I don't think that the terrorists are so much smarter than we are. They are smart. I give them that. They're clever, that, you know, but they're not infinitely smarter than we are. I don't think it's beyond the capability of our government to imagine that. And what we're learning is, in fact, that it wasn't. What we have is evidence now that there were 12 separate and explicit warnings about terrorists using planes as weapons that, you know, Condoleezza Rice may not have noticed. But we had people down in our government that were working on that.
Well, and certainly I was, you know, talking about the missile defense program on the Mike Malloy program in June of that year. And Mike said, well, Ben, what do you think they're going to do instead of ballistic missiles to attack us? And I said, they'll steal an airliner and crash it into a target of high value.
Did you really say that in June 01?
Yes, I did.
Well, Ben, I give you a lot of credit. Apparently you are 10 times more brilliant than the brightest minds of the Bush administration, which unfortunately isn't saying much.
3 months before.
what's that?
It was in Scientific American 3 months before.
Yeah, it was actually lots of places. You know, it's not unthinkable. If you can think about it, it's not unthinkable. And I'll tell you something about the future, because I think it's important to recognize it's not just a question of what the Bush administration did wrong in 01, but what we can do to prevent another attack. And that is, if it wasn't unthinkable before 9/11, let me tell you something that's completely thinkable now. And that is that terrorists could come and attack our chemical plants, attack our nuclear plants. All they have to do is take a truck bomb like Timothy McVeigh, blow it up, and if they hit it just right, you have a plume of smoke that can kill thousands of people.
And do you know what a spent fuel pool is?
You're talking about from a nuclear weapon, a fuel rod?
Nuclear power plant.
Right.
There are two ways of storing old reactor cores.
Right.
One is what's called dry cask storage, and that is what you can do with a reactor core that's been out of the reactor for a while, and it's cooled down. The other is a spent fuel pool. Now, this is a pool, and I've been at one at Zion Nuclear Power Station. It's basically a large swimming pool-like device with rails through it that the cores suspend from. You stare down in that pool, it's like looking down into hell. There's a blue Cherenkov radiation glow down there. It's full of really warm nuclear fuel with a whole bunch of isotopes that are produced by the reactor as it runs,
mm-hmm.
Most of which are short half-life and fairly deadly. And you know what? The reactor itself is armored by 6-foot reinforced concrete walls. The spent fuel pool has a tin shed over it.
A tin shed.
Now, if you were a good pilot and you had an aircraft, let's say, and what I was thinking at the time when I was discussing this, you know, back in June of 2001, was you take something like a Gulfstream and you load it with rebar.
Yep.
Okay. You crash that thing pinpoint into that spent fuel pool, there is not going to be any water left in that spent fuel pool. You're going to have a burning mess with reactor fuel mixing together in a critical mass.
And Ben, my fear is they don't even need a plane. They could take a truck. I mean, maybe we can protect the skies. I don't know. But, what about it? What about a truck?
A truck could certainly do a lot of damage to a nuclear power station, especially to the generator building next to the nuclear power station. The reactor itself is very armored, and there are cutoff valves that, if they work, blowing up the turbine building won't do you a lot of good as far as creating a meltdown. However, they've never tested those reactor safety devices under full load.
Well, Ben, I want to thank you for your call and your experience. You obviously know a lot about this. Unfortunately, Congress is not doing anything. When I was working on the Committee on Homeland Security, there was a Democratic proposal to harden nuclear plants, to harden chemical plants, to spend $4 billion to buy up loose nukes in the Soviet Union, and to protect our first responders, our policemen, our firefighters, so they have the communications equipment they need to respond in case of a major attack. And the Bush administration threatened to veto it. And I don't know that I need to say any more than just that. But, hey, Ben, thanks very much for your call.
You're very welcome.
I appreciate that. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your first name? Where are you from?
Hi, this is Ed from Mars Plains.
Hello, Ed from Mars Plains. Ed sends me a number of emails. He's sort of my token conservative, and I'm glad to have you on the show.
Hi. I just wanted to, make two comments. One is I must have watched a different hearing this morning because I thought Condoleezza Rice handled herself very well, and I thought she pretty much handled everybody and handled all the issues raised by Richard Clark.
Well, I think she was dignified. I'll grant you that. She didn't break down and scream at anyone. I mean, she certainly was dignified. But to me, what was interesting was, you know, all the things that she had to admit under close questioning, namely that she knew that there were Al-Qaeda operatives in the United States. She couldn't remember whether she told the president about that. She said that there was a task force in the FBI to handle this, but she couldn't explain why thousands of FBI agents, no one could remember doing anything about it. I think she did as well as could have been done given the facts of the case, but I think the facts of the case are pretty severe against her.
Well, I just think that, the bottom line, of course, nobody's perfect. I think the one thing she did do was demystify what you termed as Clinton stopping the L.A. Millennium plot, which really was nothing more than a border patrol agent who wasn't even on high alert, who just happened to do her job, much like Colleen Raleigh, except in this case she was empowered to do the job she could have.
But you see the difference. But Ed, that's exactly the point. That's exactly the difference. This customs agent, okay, had the authority, could do something, and they took it from the bottom all the way up to the top. Colleen Raleigh, again, an intrepid, very good agent, tried to do the exact same thing, and her comments were ignored. She tried to even go to Washington, and she was threatened with being fired if she told everyone about Zacharias Moussaoui. That's the difference between the Clinton administration and the Bush administration, as I see it.
Not at all. This custom agent did her job and stopped it at the bottom from the bottom without the top ever knowing it until much later when they were there to take the credit for it. Colleen Raleigh, I mean, it was a different situation. Colleen Raleigh was doing an investigation. The Border Patrol agent was on patrol. I mean,
why wasn't Colleen Raleigh listened to? Why didn't the FBI take her complaint seriously? Why is it that Condoleezza Rice testified today the FBI was tasked with finding these people at the top, that the people at the FBI at the bottom found the people, and there was no connection in the middle? Why was that?
the difference was the patrol agent discovered a problem and had the authority to do something about the problem. In this case, an FBI agent was doing an investigation. She discovered something that was a little bit alarming, but nothing that was actionable. She didn't have the authority to go in and arrest this guy before and find out, you know, his affiliations. She just had a suspicion.
But she had authority to do was to tell her people higher up to write the infamous Phoenix memo to say, I think you should look at this. And we know that the people at the high levels knew that there was this huge terrorist threat. We know that Condoleezza Rice said that she thought the FBI was doing something about it. The people at the top knew there was a severe danger, right? The people at the bottom didn't know. And maybe if George Bush had some of the principals meetings that Clinton had, then maybe they could have told, you know, the people at the bottom, you need to be careful, you need to report anything. Shake the tree, as Clark put it. Shake the tree and find us anything. I think that if Zacharias Moussaoui had been brought to the attention of somebody like Richard Clark, we might very well have prevented at least this conspiracy.
Actually, as Condoleezza Rice's testimony shows, Louis Freeh was gone, and actually the FBI agent, the head of the FBI's counterterrorism, was talking to Richard Clark. So Richard Clark should have known about Colleen Raleigh's testimony, and if he thought it was so prevalent, he should have, you know, walked into to George Bush's office or walked into Condoleezza Rice and said, I'm either resigning or you're doing something about this right now. I mean, if you're going to go down that road,
okay, but
again,
Ed,
it's 2020 hindsight.
Well, I know, but Clark has testified, and I don't think anyone denies it, that he didn't know about Colleen Raleigh. What I'm saying is that if you've got the right kind of top-down administration, you've got a president that's really in control, you can make sure that people way down the line are getting the message. And if it didn't get from the message from the top to the bottom, if I were president of the United States, I would go down, find out who didn't deliver the message, and fire them. Hey, Ed, I got to take another call. We only got a few minutes left.
I just want to add one more point.
Okay, real quick.
Urge all your listeners to read Bob Carey's editorial in theopinionjournal.com.
Fair enough.
Basically, Richard Clark was wrong, George Bush was right on Iraq.
I disagree, but I always appreciate your calls, Ed. Thanks so much. Sorry I had to cut off. You know, we only got a few minutes left, and I have to say, though, I do think if the president had a top-down strategy, Colleen Raleigh's memo would have gotten to the top, that it's up to any boss. If you're a boss of a large company, okay, and someone at the low level knows something that you need to know about, it's your job as boss to make sure that your employee and their employees get the message. And if the answer is it's important enough to you, if it's important enough to you to get the message, then what I would do is I'd go down and say, all right, the president told the FBI to get to work. Suppose he did. Suppose that's true, Condoleezza Rice. Who did that FBI guy tell? Who did he tell? Who did she tell? And the person that stopped telling, fire them. To me, the fact that no one has been fired suggests to me that maybe the orders weren't given at the top. Caller, you got 2 minutes. Real quick, make your comment.
Yeah, it's me, Armin, again, and
I want
to make a point real clear.
Real quick.
I wouldn't say that he absolutely, per se, wanted it to happen, 9/11.
Okay.
I think that he knew that something like that was going to happen.
Okay.
And he needed something like that to happen to be our Pearl Harbor, to sell the people to go behind his obvious agenda in PNAX. And I think that if you listen to what he says, he's real careful. He says he didn't know it was going to happen on the 11th, you know,
right.
His statements towards
right.
it. He didn't know it was going to happen.
But he knew something big was coming up.
No, but he remember how clever he was when he said, I didn't know it was going to happen on the 11th, and see how careful they select their words
yep.
so that they can say that they didn't know to the minute or maybe to the hour it was going to happen or something was going to happen.
I got you, Armin. I got to go. I'll tell you, I only got an hour, so my time's up. But if you want to keep commenting on this, Armin, or anybody else, we're going to continue this discussion on Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Hey, Armin, thanks for your call. Sorry to cut you off there. Like I said, we only got about a minute left. We're only doing an hour now. So if you want to continue this discussion, Sunday, 8 p.m., we're going to go in detail, and I'm going to play for you, if you've missed it, some of the highlights of the hearing we had this morning. There were no apologies. Condoleezza Rice was not like Richard Clark, who stood up and apologized to the families. What there was just going on and on, saying we couldn't have known, we couldn't have known. But as we've discussed in this hour, and we're going to discuss further on Sunday, there are all kinds of indications they should have known. Calling Raleigh's memo should have made it to the top. Clinton stopped the Millennium investigation. Why couldn't they have stopped this one? Hey, I hope you'll tune in tomorrow. Tomorrow is a very important show. We're going to talk about what's going on in Sudan. It appears that the people in the north, who are mostly Arab Muslims, are lining up and shooting some of the Christian African Americans, not African Americans, Christian Africans, excuse me, black people, basically, in the south. And it may be the beginning of a genocide. And I've got two very important guests from Persecution Project and Amnesty International who are going to talk to us about what's going on. On the Inside Scoop, I think it's important not just to talk about what's going on in Washington, but what's going on in the world that's not getting mainstream press, because these are things that we in Washington can do something about. And however you felt against the war in Iraq, I think what's going on in Sudan is far more serious. Hope you'll tune in tomorrow, same time as this time. And then Sunday at 8 p.m., we're going to repeat a lot of this discussion on Condoleezza Rice. I didn't have a lot of time to finish. Well, I have a chance to take your calls. And then Monday, very important guest, Craig Unger, author of House of Bush, House of Saud, talking about the connections between the Bush administration and the Saudi government. We've got so much going on that we've got a